Welcome to Catholic Answers Live, the program where you participate with your questions about apologetics and evangelization, including the most important theological, spiritual, moral, and social issues facing the world today. Call now with your question for today's guest, toll free, 1-888-31-TRUTH. That's 888-318-7884. Now, from San Diego, Catholic Answers Live.
Open forum today on Catholic Answers Live. It is Tuesday. That means open forum. Open forum means if you have a question about the Catholic faith, if you have a question about why we Catholics do and believe what we do and believe, those questions are welcome. Or maybe you have a more general question having to do with morals or philosophy or religion. Those are welcome as well. You don't have to be Catholic to call 888-318-7884, 888-318-7884. Our guest this hour is internationally known author and speaker Jimmy Akin. Jimmy's the senior apologist here at Catholic Answers. He has more than 20 years of experience answering questions just like we're going to get to today. Jimmy, welcome.
Hey, how are you doing?
I am very well, and I have a question to start with for you.
Okay.
If I have to give a Jimmy Akin book, actually, that didn't come out right, but if I have the opportunity.
If someone is, you know, holding you at gunpoint and says, forcing you to give a Jimmy Akin book.
For Christmas. Yeah, that's what I meant to say.
Okay.
Yes,
yeah.
Thanks for clarifying that. What's the best of the Christmas books?
Well, in terms of the book, one of the books I'm most proud of, it's A Daily Defense, because it just covers so many things in such a user-friendly way that I would recommend that as a gift-giving book in all kinds of circumstances.
Yeah, because really anything you want to know pretty much
just
is in
about.
There.
Yeah.
I mean, 366. I mean, it's 365 plus one, but I can do that math.
Yeah.
Different questions and answers.
What have you done with the real Cy Kelly?
I know. It's shocking that I can do that, though. If I can add one to any number.
Uh-huh.
I feel like I
what's Google plus one?
Google one.
If you want to call it that,
I believe that's Google one. Yes. Did you ever do that thing when you were a kid? I block you infinity or something like that.
Oh,
the other person would
that
say
that kind of thing. Yeah.
I block you infinity plus one.
Uh-huh.
That always defeated it. And so what is that? Infinity one?
I think that's being juvenile.
Well, when I was a child, I was juvenile a lot.
Uh-huh.
We've been going around.
So was the Roman historian.
Juvenile.
Juvenile. Yeah.
You say juvenile.
Say juvenile. I say juvenile. Let's call the whole thing
potato,
off.
Potato. Caribbean. Mm-hmm. Speaking of Caribbean, yesterday several folks from Puerto Rico said hello to us.
Oh, awesome.
And we got to say hi to them on the air because we asked for people from South America.
We're doing our world hello tour right now.
But the people in Puerto Rico were like, can you just count us with South America? And then one guy from Guatemala. So we threw him. And then somebody from Brazil. But today is Australia and Oceania.
Okay.
So anybody who says hello on Facebook, I'll try to get to YouTube as well, but I'm less good at YouTube. But we'd love to say hello to folks from Australia or Oceania.
Let me know when we finish the tour because I'll do the Animaniacs Nations of the World song.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Right. So Karen says good morning from Australia already.
Oh, awesome.
So thanks, Australia.
Good day.
For joining us. Again, 888-318-7884 is the number. Open forum is the topic. If you've got a question that's been nagging you or maybe a person who's been nagging you with a question you don't have an answer for about the Catholic faith, about religion in general, about morals, well, today is your day, 888-318-7884. Already lots of calls, Jimmy. Shall we take a call before we go to the break? Okay, Anonymous in San Jose, California, watching on YouTube. Hello, Anonymous. Your question for Jimmy Akin.
Hi there. How are you?
We're good, thanks.
Hello? Okay.
We can hear you.
I have a quick question. So I'm a professional makeup artist that works both in the bridal and small film industry in Northern California.
Uh-huh.
And I'm also born and raised Catholic. And I wanted a specific definitive teaching on the use of cosmetics. I mean, I've looked all over the internet about what the Catholic teachings are, but when does it cross the line of vanity and how much are we allowed to wear, as well as are women supposed to be wearing dresses? The reason why I ask this is because I've looked into some of what the claims of what the Virgin Mary has told the children in Garabandal, Spain, and how she mentioned that, you know, we must wear dresses and stuff, or even at her apparition in Brazil, which was approved by the Catholic Church. So just kind of like, what are women allowed to wear freely without it being sinful?
Okay. First thing I'd say is for people who may not be aware, the reported apparition in Garabandal, Spain, has not been approved by the Church, even though it's been around. I mean, it occurred a number of decades ago, and so it's not like there hasn't been a chance to investigate it and evaluate it, but it has not been approved. So I wouldn't place credence in it. I'm not sure exactly what other apparition you're mentioning, but in general, apparitions are not things that the Church endorses in terms of this is Church teaching. The Church recognizes that God sometimes gives private revelations to people to help them live out their lives better, but those revelations, even when they're genuine, are not universally binding. They are something that is meant to help people in particular situations, but they don't have a universal significance, which is why they're not part of what's called public revelation, like what we find in the Bible, which is of universal significance, at least in principle. Even then, we have to distinguish between, you know, does this Bible verse apply to our time or to another time? And the same thing would be even more true of matters in merely private revelation. So those aren't the place you want to look to understand the Church's teaching. Those are pastoral applications for particular settings, even when they're approved. In terms of the Church's view of makeup, there's no hard and fast line. There's no way to quantify when makeup becomes vanity, because – and it's certainly not an amount of makeup, because – people's situations differ so widely. I mean, you could have a person, and this would apply more perhaps, say, to plastic surgery than to makeup, but the same thing applies in principle to makeup. People are coming from different starting points. And some people, for example, may have a disfigurement that they might want to use plastic surgery to address to help them just look normal, whereas a person who already looks normal or is even attractive, for them to use plastic surgery, it could – I'm not saying would – but it could cross the line into vanity. Ultimately, vanity is really an attitude of the heart. It's not an external thing. And so no certain amount of either plastic surgery or makeup is going to count as vanity, or personal grooming in the case of men. You know, it can be vain. But it's not necessarily vain, and really what you have to do is not look at the external behavior, but look at the heart and say, what's going on here? Is this person's motive, or really is my motive good? Because we don't need to be judging the hearts of others. That's something that is between them and God, and as both the Bible and the Catechism indicate, we ought to put a favorable construction on others' attitudes and behaviors. And so in the main, we should mind our own business and not be thinking ill of other people and judging them as, oh, this person must be vain or something like that. That's not a helpful attitude to take towards another person in the vast majority of situations. In terms of clothing, the Church does not have a teaching regarding specific types of clothing that must be worn by the sexes. What clothing is considered appropriate varies widely from one culture to another. In some cultures, dresses or skirts are traditional garb for women, and it's fine if you want to wear them. In our culture, both dresses and skirts are considered traditional for women, but these days so are pants. And there's no reason that you can't wear pants if you're a woman in America. In other cultures, they have very different dress. In India, for example, women traditionally wear saris, which are those kind of long wrapped cloths that aren't either quite a dress, and they're certainly not a skirt. And like I said, this varies based on what gender you are in, what cultural setting you're in. In Scotland, it's traditional for men to wear kilts, you know, which is a type of skirt. So it's not like there's one form of dress that's forever valid for a given gender. It's something that the Church does not have a teaching on, and that it leaves up to the local cultures.
Anonymous, I got to say thank you because we have got to go to a quick break. We'll be right back with more Open Forum with Jimmy Akin on Catholic Answers Live right after this.
This is Bishop Robert Baer, and you're listening to Catholic Answers Live.
Christmas is coming, and with Advent already upon us, we want to make sure you know about our annual Christmas sale, with hundreds of great faith-building resources all on sale at 20% off when you enter promo code WINTER at checkout. With great new resources on Scripture, church history, the saints, Bible prophecy, and so much more. There's simply no better time to stock up on resources to build up your faith and the faith of those around you. Phone 888-291-8000 or go to the shop at Catholic.com right now to take advantage of what is truly the best Catholic sale on the internet going on now through the end of the year. And remember, enter promo code WINTER at checkout to save 20% on hundreds of great resources throughout the store.
Homeschool Connections, an online provider of courses for your Catholic homeschool, is a sponsor of Catholic Answers Live. Homeschool Connections' website is homeschoolconnections.com.
The Catholic Answers Minute. I'm Father Vincent Serpa. In Luke 1, while the priest Zechariah entered the sanctuary to burn incense, the angel Gabriel appeared to him, telling him that his barren wife would bear him a son, who would be filled with the Holy Spirit and would bring many Israelites to the Lord. He questioned how this could be, since he and his wife were advanced in years. Gabriel replied that he would be unable to speak until the day when such was fulfilled, because he had doubted. When Zechariah emerged from the sanctuary, he was unable to speak, and the people realized that he had seen a vision. Shortly thereafter, his wife Elizabeth conceived in her old age. God had a purpose in not giving them children through all those years. How many days had they wondered why their prayers seemed to not have been heard? God always has a plan. It is for us to acknowledge His sovereignty by trusting Him and thereby showing our love for Him. I'm Father Vincent Serpa for Catholic Answers, Catholic.com.
Call now with your question, 888-318-7884. This is Catholic Answers Live.
A very blessed Advent to you. Thanks so much for joining us today on Catholic Answers Live. Open forum, meaning anything you'd like to know about the life, the faith, the history of the Catholic Church is welcome. We'd love to take your question. You don't have to be Catholic to call. Anybody can call. 888-318-7884. As a matter of fact, if you're not Catholic and you're listening, we really like it when non-Catholics call. If there's something that you're curious about or something you've heard about the Catholic Church, we would love to address your question. Again, 888-318-7884. And if you happen to be in Australia or Micronesia or Samoa, or I would see probably even throw Indonesia in there.
Japan.
Yeah, okay. Oceania mm-hmm. and Australia.
Airstrip 1.
Where's Airstrip 1? I never heard of that.
Oh, read 1984.
Oh,
it's an island in the ocean somewhere.
Okay. Yeah. Say hi on Facebook and let us know what country you're in. And we'd really like to say hi back to you on the air. We go now to Tim in Rochester, New York, listening to 92.9 FM. Your question for Jimmy Akin, Tim.
Hi. Yes, I came into the church in 2012 as a convert from the Methodist Church in which I was raised. And I was also baptized and confirmed before my RCAA. So my question is, when I came into the church on Easter Vigil, I received all the other sacraments, my First Communion and my reconciliation. But I noticed that a lot of my friends who were...
Tim, let me ask you one quick thing. I assume you were also confirmed when you came into the church. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay, good.
A lot of my Catholic friends who were raised Catholic, when they were confirmed, they were given the option to choose a patron saint, and the bishop came and anoints them and gives them, calls them their patron saint name. And I was wondering, as somebody who never had the opportunity to do this, obviously Methodists don't honor saints the same way we as Catholics do. If there, is a way that I can have that, officially done through the church, or is it more or less now that sacrament has already been preferred upon me, if that's something, if I just choose a saint informally and try to, that I respect and try to emulate their lives and the way they live towards Christ.
Yeah, so the custom of having a patron saint and using a patron saint name either in conjunction with baptism or in conjunction with confirmation is purely a matter of custom. It is not a matter of law. And so it's something that you're perfectly free to do. People, in fact, commonly have multiple patron saints, or can anyway, whether they're aware of it or not, because many saints are patrons of particular locations, like here in the United States. Our Lady of Guadalupe is the patron of the United States of America, or of the Americas, I should say. But then also locations have saints, like Saint Ambrose is the patron of Milan, Italy, and Saint Christopher is the patron saint of travelers. So anytime you're traveling, Saint Christopher is a patron. So it's not like everybody has a certain fixed patron with no variability to it. If you find or are aware of a particular saint who you'd like to have as a patron and who you'd like to pray for you and who you'd like to learn about and emulate his virtues, that's entirely up to you. So feel free to pick one or more than one. That's what I did when I got confirmed.
How's that for you, Tim?
All right, thank you so much.
Very good.
That's great. Thank you.
Thank you very much for that call. Tim, we go now to Lewis in Brooklyn, New York, listening on the Catholic Answers app. Lewis, you are on with Jimmy Akin.
Yes, hello. Thank you. I wanted to know, I have heard a priest that I was listening to on YouTube that I've been listening to for a while, but he said something that I found odd. He said that that evolution and the idea of evolution and the Big Bang can't really be held by Catholics because it goes against the documents that were set forth in the Fourth Lateran Council.
Okay. Did he quote something from the Fourth Lateran Council to support that?
Nope. I've heard that claim before. Mm-hmm. And yeah.
Okay.
If you heard that clean, if not, like, how do I answer that?
Okay. I would say this. Now, in order to engage in a specific way what he said, I'd have to know who this is and know what he said exactly. I'm not aware of anything in the Fourth Lateran Council that would even be an issue here. But if he has some particular passage from the Fourth Lateran Council, it's something I could certainly take a look at. But barring that, I would say this. He's wrong and his judgment is untrustworthy and you should not be listening to this guy because the church has had a long time to think about both the Big Bang Theory and the doctrine of evolution, and after it's mature, and these ideas were not even around when the Fourth Lateran Council met. I mean, that was hundreds of years ago. And so these ideas were not around, and they certainly didn't engage them directly and were not attempting to comment on them. So what this guy is doing is trying to read vapors arising from things that the council may have said that he, in his view, thinks somehow contradict these modern scientific proposals. However, his judgment and his personal opinion are not binding on Catholics here. What is the reflection that has been done by the contemporary magisterium of the church. And when you look at that, you see that provided certain limits are respected, the church has discerned that neither the Big Bang Theory nor the theory of evolution is fundamentally contrary to the sources of faith. And so it is permissible for Catholics to believe in at least certain understandings of the Big Bang Theory and of evolution. The one of the key requirements being that we understand that God is behind both of them. If you think the scientific evidence supports those views, fine, but God is ultimately in control. In terms – and there are a few other things that we won't go into, but this is something that if it really were contrary to something that the Fourth Lateran Council had said, if it was fundamentally irreconcilable with something that the church had infallibly defined in the past, people would have noticed. You know, the church has a wealth of theologians and God guides the magisterium to ensure that even, you know, if it, even though it may take something of a process for the magisterium to arrive at a mature judgment on a matter, nevertheless, God is in charge of guiding that process. And you would not have had individuals like Blessed Pius XII speaking very highly of the Big Bang Theory back in the 1950s, or Saint John Paul II endorsing certain views of evolution in the 1990s. And they weren't alone. It wasn't like these two guys were rogues. The rest of the magisterium was on board with this. And so to have one priest somewhere whose personal opinion is that something Fourth Lateran said that wasn't even about evolution or the Big Bang Theory somehow precludes them for all Catholics is just an irresponsible judgment that he should not be airing in public, and people should not be listening to him, whoever he may be.
Clear enough, Lewis?
No, it definitely was. I appreciate that answer. Can I just ask one quick follow-up? Really
sure.
Quick?
Yes, please.
Okay. So the reason why that struck me the most is because I actually, you know, I believe in evolution. I believe in the science of, on it. And I never thought it contradicted anything in my Catholic faith. But I do know, I don't know how to articulate it in a sense to myself or to anybody else. Like, how can I reconcile the two? Because I know some people think it's not reconcilable. Is there any sources that you know of that I could, anything I could read or anything that I could make that more clearer to myself?
How you want to reconcile evolution with what?
So
the text of Genesis?
It's not the first time I heard this claim. So, you know, not this is the first time I heard it from a Catholic, but I've heard this claim before. So I just wanted to know if there's anything I could read to help my understanding on that.
Yeah, there have been a variety of works that have addressed this. And I've done some writing about it myself, but it's not all published. In terms of what to read about it, I would suggest starting with a book. I would suggest starting by Googling framework interpretation Genesis. The framework interpretation is one that is not the Catechism of the Catholic Church seems to allude to it without endorsing all of its details, but basically, what the framework interpretation is that Genesis 1, with the 6 days of creation, distributes the work of the Creator symbolically over the period of a seven-day Hebrew week. And it's understood from various clues in the text, like the fact the sun isn't created until the fourth day, but the day-night cycle is created on day one. Well, the ancients knew that the sun is responsible for whether it's day or night. They knew that, just like we do. And so that's seen as a cue to the reader to understand that what you're reading is a symbolic narrative rather than a chronological narrative. And what you see in these passages is God creates on the first 3 days these different realms, day, night, sky, sea, and then dry land. And then on the second 3 days, he goes back over them and populates them with the sun, the moon, and the stars in the day and the night, then the birds and the fish in the sky and the sea, and finally the land animals and man on the earth. And so all of this is a very highly structured narrative that suggests it's symbolic to the audience, particularly the creation of the sun on the fourth day. And therefore, it's not meant to give us chronological information. And something similar is true when we move into later chapters of Genesis, at least the early ones. And it's understood that when God creates Adam's body from the dust of the ground, that doesn't mean he literally did it with hands that he doesn't have. He's not making a statue and breathing life into it literally. But it's an affirmation that man is part of the material order and that God created man out of the material order and then endowed him with the spirit. So whether or not there are prior biological life forms that are part of that is another matter. Also, John Paul II in 1996 gave an address to the Pontifical Academy of Science. And if you Google John Paul II Evolution Pontifical Academy, it'll come up and you can read the Pope's words for yourself.
Lewis, thank you very, very much for that call. It is open forum, and any call with a question about the Catholic faith is welcome. And you don't have to be Catholic to call. 888-318-7884. We'll be right back.
Christmas weekend, EWTN and Anathan Theater present a live radio drama adapted from the popular movie, It's a Wonderful Life.
I'm in trouble, Mr. Potter. I've got to raise $8,000 immediately.
Oh, so that's what the reporters want to talk to you about.
The reporters?
Yes. There's a man over there from the DA's office, too.
Please help me, Mr. Potter. Help me, please, won't you?
Merry Christmas, George Bailey. Saturday night at 5 Eastern and Sunday night at 7 Eastern on EWTN Radio.
Did the Catholic Church add books to the Bible? Or did Protestants remove 7 books from the Old Testament? Why Catholic Bibles Are Bigger takes you on a fact-filled tour through the history of the Bible, revealing the whole story behind the lost books of the Protestant Old Testament. With the latest information and discourse on crucial issues, Why Catholic Bibles Are Bigger is a book that belongs in the library of every serious student of Scripture. And as a special bonus, if you order online, we'll add an ebook copy of 15 Myths, Mistakes, and Misrepresentations About the Deuterocanon to your order absolutely free. Get your free ebook today. Order your copy of Why Catholic Bibles Are Bigger by logging on to our online shop at shop.catholic.com. Just like the saints of the Counter-Reformation, our own souls are in constant need of reform, of reconversion to God and His will for us. We struggle with sin. We become distracted in prayer. We find it hard to be loving and easy to be selfish. In Reform Yourself, Sean McAfee shows you how these magnificent saints can be guides to your own personal transformation. We all need to reform our souls. Let the saints who reformed the church show you how. Order your copy of Reform Yourself today by calling 1-888-291-8000, visiting the shop at Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Welcome back and blessed Advent to you. We have an open forum today, 2 hours of open forum. So if you're on the line, keep waiting. If you haven't got on the line, we still got time. You can get your call in 888-318-7884. We welcome any call on any aspect of the life, faith, the history of the Catholic Church. I want to say hi to Hugh in Australia and Cleofa in New Zealand and Marte in Malaysia and Brian in Middle Earth. Is Middle Earth a Pacific Rim country? Or?
I always understood Middle Earth as being a Romana clef for Europe.
Oh, I see. I see what you're saying. Yeah.
However, for our friend in Malaysia and all of our friends in Malaysia and Indonesia, apa kabar.
Yeah, and from me too, mm-hmm. as well. I have. What did we just say?
Oh, what was that? Asked if there. It's a greeting.
Oh, okay.
And it literally means like doing good. And the standard reply is kabar baik, which means doing good.
Oh,
Or are you good and doing good?
Ah, very good. All right.
Or even more informally, baik, baik.
I love that you didn't just give it to me, but you also gave me the informal. I'll just throw the informal in there. 888-318-7884 is our number. Also, I want to remind you that you can have the free ebook, The Case for Christmas, Answers to Attacks on Christmas, just by going to our website, catholic.com. Click on the banner. You get the free ebook. It's as easy as that. Again, 888-31-TRUTH, the number, and waiting on the line is Eric in Chicago, Illinois, listening on the EWTN app. Eric, you are on with Jimmy Akin. Your question, please.
All right. So I was talking to a Protestant friend of mine about once saved, always saved.
Okay.
And the only thing I could come up with, and it was stupid, but it was a third of the angels fell.
Uh-huh.
Because they had, free will. Mm-hmm. And they chose to go,
mm-hmm.
and they were in heaven. So, even if you get to heaven, I told them, you could still fall because you still have free will. My wife accused me of spreading heresies, and I want to know what's wrong with my argument.
Okay. I don't know that I would classify it as heresy. I'd have to think about whether it meets the formal definition of heresy, but... and since you did it without intending to, you certainly didn't commit the canonical crime of heresy. But I would say that your wife is right that that's not the church's view of things, that we will be secure in our salvation in heaven, and that the angels who did not fall are also secure in heaven. The idea is that God gives both us and the angels a choice. And once we make that choice, it becomes definitive. For the angels, it's commonly understood that this happened in the first moment of their existence, that they were given a choice to choose for or against God. Some chose against God, some chose for God. But once that happened, it became definitive for them. So the evil angels continue in evil, the good angels continue in good. For humans, it's a little different. We're a different kind of being than the angels are, and we have lifetimes here on this earth before we die and then we'll eventually be resurrected. And it's understood that our time of choice, our time of decision, is stretched out over the course of our lives. So we can go back and forth between good and evil over the course of our lives, but when we die, that choice becomes definitive. And so if you have chosen to reject God's goodness by the end of your life, and that's how you die, then like the evil angels, you'll be confirmed in evil. On the other hand, if you accept God's grace and friendship, then you'll be confirmed in good, just like the good angels. And so you won't be going back and forth in the afterlife. Because the angels who fell did so, according to the common Catholic understanding, at the beginning of their existence and not after the choice became definitive, I would say that that it's not the best argument for dealing with someone who believes in once saved, always saved, because we're talking because the angels don't always have the capacity to fall from grace. The ones who chose good remain in good, just like we will afterwards. So I would appeal to different texts in the Bible to support the possibility of losing salvation in this life. We can agree, once saved, always saved, if by that you're referring to the next life, where if you're saved when you die, you're going to stay saved for all eternity. That's true, but that's not what they mean. They mean in this life you can't lose your salvation. And there are a wide variety of biblical texts that indicate the possibility of losing salvation. The very phrase fallen from grace comes from St. Paul in his letter to the Galatians. He warns them that if they accept circumcision, then they've fallen from grace. He also, in 1 Corinthians 11, talks to the Corinthians about how it's possible they could have believed in vain if they don't maintain the Christian faith. And Jesus himself in John 15 talks to the disciples and says, if you remain in me, you'll remain in my Father's love. But if you don't, then you'll be removed and like branches from a grapevine, and the destiny of such branches is to be burned in the fire. So there are three places you might want to look at. If you go to my personal website, jimmyakin.com, and look in the file library there, I have a debate, my notes from a debate on the loss of salvation, and I cover a lot of different verses that deal with this. So you might just type in loss of salvation, Jimmy Akin, and see what comes up.
Thank you very, very much for that call, Eric. We go now to Rick in Eagle, Nebraska, listening on 88.3 FM. Rick, your question for Jimmy Akin.
How you doing, sir?
Just fine.
I have a two-part question. When I first got introduced to the Catholic ways, it was in a sweat lodge by like a medicine woman.
Okay.
And they were singing Native American songs, and at the same time she was having a rosary going on and all kinds of stuff that I've never heard of before.
Okay.
Number one, would that be considered wrong to you guys?
I'd have to know more about it. Obviously, anytime you have what looks like it might be a blending of two different religions, that's something known as technically as syncretism, then that's a problem because we don't want the Christian faith blended with non-Christian ideas. On the other hand, we shouldn't just automatically assume that anything that incorporates cultural forms from different cultures automatically corrupts the Christian faith. That's not the case. People in different parts of the world have always expressed their Christian faith in terms of cultural forms that are familiar to them, whether it's music or decoration or art or whatever it may be, certainly language. I mean, language is one of the biggest, maybe the biggest aspect of culture, and people express their Christian faith in different languages all over the world. So they can certainly express it in different cultural forms without it being a problem. That process of taking the Christian faith and expressing it through particular cultural forms is a process known as enculturation. And it's generally the responsibility of the local bishops to make sure that the Christian faith is being enculturated in the local culture in a proper way. And so I haven't heard about a situation like the one you mentioned, and so I have no way of knowing exactly what went on there and evaluating it. But in terms of the principles, if the Christian faith was being adulterated syncretistically, then that is a problem. But if it was merely being enculturated in a particular way, then that's not in principle a problem.
Okay, Rick.
Well, for that certain question, her teaching men, would that be wrong? I mean, you know.
Church's understanding of the application of the prohibition on women teaching applies to at Mass as the homilist. It's not something that applies in other settings, and we can even see that from the New Testament itself, where we have in the book of Acts, there's a passage where Apollos, an early Christian evangelist at an early stage of his development as an evangelist, didn't know everything he needed to know about Jesus. He knew some, but not enough. And so a couple of Jews from Rome named Priscilla and her husband Aquila took him aside privately to give him private instruction. And the fact that Priscilla is mentioned first, and not just in this passage, but in other passages as well, that's very unusual. I mean, it's unusual to have the wife mentioned at all, much less mentioning her first. And that suggests she's the dominant personality in these situations. And so the fact that Priscilla participated, apparently as the dominant figure, in helping provide Apollos, an evangelist, with additional instruction about Jesus shows that women can indeed teach things. I mean, anybody who's got something worth learning is worth listening to.
Rick, thanks very, very much for that call. We'll take a quick break, and we'll be back with more Jimmy Akin on Open Forum Day here at Catholic Answers right after this.
Your questions, Catholic Answers, live.
Tim Staples, Trent Horn, Cy Kellett, Chris Check, Carlo Broussard. Our on-fire lineup of speakers will inform and inspire your audience to grow in their Catholic faith. For more information on booking a Catholic Answers speaker for your event, visit CatholicAnswersSpeakers.com today.
Catholic Answers Live is brought to you in part by CatholicSingles.com, the website for Catholics who want to meet others who share their Catholic values for faith, fellowship, and love. You can learn more at CatholicSingles.com. Catholic Answers Live thanks CatholicSingles.com for their generous support.
At Christmas time, we all want to be the one to give that special gift that keeps on giving. That's why we've made subscriptions to Catholic Answers magazine available at a very special price through the end of the year. And now, when you purchase a subscription, you get a subscription to the digital edition added to your order for free. That's right, $10 off one-year subscriptions and $20 off two-year subscriptions, plus a free digital subscription. With a deal like that, it's the perfect gift for friends, family members, seminarians, your priest, or anyone on your list. When you get right down to it, what other gift has the potential to touch hearts and reap eternal rewards? Log on today to CatholicAnswersMagazine.com and sign up friends and family alike for a gift that is bound to make a difference in their lives and the lives of those they meet. Share the faith. Defend the faith. Catholic Answers Magazine from Catholic Answers, the most trusted name in Catholic apologetics.
Pope Francis reminds us that it does not take a specialized degree in theology to become a great evangelist. We're all called to evangelize. Think about the woman at the well. After she encountered Jesus, she immediately went into the city and invited others to meet him as she had. You and I can go out now and do the same. And St. Paul Street Evangelization can help. Get involved today by contacting us at streetevangelization.com. That's streetevangelization.com.
Call now with your question. 888-318-7884. This is Catholic Answers Live.
Hello and welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I'm Cy Kellett, your host. Our guest this hour, Jimmy Akin. And our topic, whatever is on your mind.
Speaking of which, our previous caller had, I believe, based on what the call screener said, an additional little aspect to his question, which was actually a different question, but we weren't able to get to it before the break. He wanted to know, did Jesus have other brothers through Mary? And the answer is no. It's a subject we've addressed many times here on the show. And what I would recommend, since we weren't able to keep him on the line through the break, is that he just go to Catholic.com and type in Jesus Brothers, and he'll get a lot of information on exactly that subject.
Very good. Very good. Let's go now to Lucille in El Paso, Texas, listening on KHRO 1150 AM. Lucille, your question for Jimmy Akin.
Hello, this is Lucille.
Hi, yes. Lucille. Your question.
I have a friend, a very close one, who's a practicing Catholic,
okay,
who says that she finds it very hard to believe that Jesus suffered.
Okay.
How can one deal with that? How can one offer a rebuttal or try to understand where she's coming from?
Yeah, so I would say a couple things. The inclination she has, because it sounds like she understands that Jesus is God, and that's true. And there have been people down through history who have said, well, Jesus is God. God can't be hurt, so Jesus couldn't suffer. And on the surface, if you just from those facts, that sounds reasonable. But there are additional facts, like Jesus took on a human nature. And so via his human nature, he could suffer. In the second century, there were a group of people known as Docetists who believed that Jesus was God, but they didn't think he took on a human nature. They didn't think he was really a man. And so they said he didn't suffer on the cross, that he just appeared to suffer. And that's where they got their name. Docetism comes from a Greek word that means to seem or to appear, that Jesus just appeared to be a man. He just appeared to suffer. And that's actually a heresy, that view. It's fundamentally contrary to the Christian faith. And so it might help, or it might not help your friend to know that, you know, there have been people who said things like this, but it was judged to be heresy. And there's a very good reason for that, because if you look in the New Testament itself talks about Jesus suffering. And in fact, Jesus himself talks about his own suffering. If you look, for example, in Luke chapter 24, there are a number of passages where Jesus talks about how his sufferings were to transpire. In Luke 24, verses 25 and 26, he's talking on the road to Emmaus with Clopas and his associate, and he says to them, "O foolish men and slow of heart, to believe in all the prophets have spoken, was it not necessary for the Christ to suffer these things and to enter into his glory?" So Jesus himself is saying, based on the message of the prophets, it was necessary that the Christ, he himself, suffer. Later on in Luke 24:46, he says, "Thus it is written that the Christ would suffer and rise again from the dead the third day." So those are just two examples. There are many others in the New Testament that indicate Jesus suffered. Perhaps the key to helping your friend understand that conceptually, you know, from those verses, she should be able to understand Jesus did suffer. The key to helping her understand that conceptually is realizing that Jesus is not only God, he is God. And he took on a human nature. And since he's God, he's omnipotent. He can do whatever he chooses. And if he chose to make his human body invulnerable like Superman, well, then he wouldn't have suffered. But he has the choice. And he chose to leave his human form vulnerable so that it could suffer. It could get tired. It could get hungry. It could get crucified. And that was the choice he made for his humanity in this earthly life. He chose to leave it vulnerable. And that is the key that helps square the two concepts.
I see. Okay. Well, maybe that'll help.
I hope so.
You never know, Lucille. Maybe it will. Lucille, thanks so much for that call. 888-318-7884. We're this hour and next hour saying hi to folks in Australia or anywhere out there in the Pacific Oceanic region. If you're there, say hello on Facebook or YouTube, and we'll try to say hello on the air. Fla from Brisbane, Australia. Thanks so much for checking in and saying hi. Christopher from Sarawak, Malaysia. Does that sound right? Sarawak?
Yeah.
Did I say that right?
Sarawak.
Sarawak. Oh, okay. Very good. 888-318-7884. The number. We go now to Mark in Coldwater, Michigan, listening on 89.7 AM. FM. Mark, you're on with Jimmy Akin.
Hey, guys. I'm a recent convert to the church. My wife and I were Protestant and studied for several years and then made the change.
Uh-huh.
And in the past few months, I've been going.
Ooh, hey, cut out there, Mark. Could you repeat that?
Mark, we're just having a little trouble. I'm going to put you on hold and see if you can work with Nick to get that line to work a little better while we check in with Rachel. We're not getting rid of you. Hang on just a quick sec. We'll get back to you. Rachel in Lubbock, Texas, listening on 100.2.7 FM. Your question for Jimmy Akin. Rachel? No, nobody. I don't. Maybe it's our phone. I don't know. Let's try. Oh, well, Juan's in Guadalajara, Mexico, listening on Catholic.com. The phones in Guadalajara work well. Right, Juan? Are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Your question for Jimmy.
Hello, Jimmy. Thanks for taking my call. My question is in regards with a practice I've been engaging myself with for the past probably 6 months.
Juan, if you could please speak directly into the phone.
Sorry?
Please speak directly into the phone. It will make it easier to hear you.
My question is in regards with a practice I have been doing for the past 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
I have been injured in my knees for the last 3-4 years.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that.
I've been trying to seek healing,
mm-hmm.
and I found this practice of Qigong, which I learned like a year ago.
Mm-hmm.
And it's based on the traditional Chinese method, traditional Chinese medicine, which it talks about the qi.
Mm-hmm.
And I just wanted to make sure it was in line with my Catholic faith.
So one of the things that that scientists have discovered is that so-called traditional medicines and medical practices can have medical therapeutic benefit at times. An example of that is aspirin. Aspirin is based on willow bark, and the use of willow bark as a pain reliever in traditional traditional medicine is something that did have some basis. And later, you know, the compounds in willow bark that make that possible were sort of replicated in aspirin, and now it's become the most popular pain reliever in the world. So there can be value in traditional therapeutic practices, but those practices also frequently are wrapped up in superstition. And there can also be harmful aspects, either physically harmful or spiritually harmful. And the belief in some Asian areas in a life force known as ki or chi that can be somehow manipulated to bring about healing is not supported either by science or by the Christian faith. And so I would say that element is superstition. But if the procedure you're using otherwise is something you find helpful, I would say, well, fine. It's helping me out. It's giving me some pain relief. It's helping me heal this, or seems to be. But I would just not attribute it to manipulating some life force. For example, to give a parallel, another discipline that is often thought to manipulate a life force is acupuncture. The idea is you put, you know, needles in certain places in a person's body, and in the traditional understanding, it manipulates energy moving around in their body somehow. Well, we don't have evidence for this kind of energy, but what we do, or at least it's popularly believed, I haven't investigated this personally, but it's popularly believed by many people that they do get a benefit from acupuncture. Well, in those cases, it would be possible to say, okay, it's not moving energy around, but it's doing something that people find helpful, whether that's placebo effect or whether it's something like relieving pressure points, you know, and there's some kind of hormonal or muscular tension that gets adjusted by sticking needles in certain locations. So there may be some therapeutic value there. It just may be the interpretation of how it works that's the problem. So I would say if you're getting benefit from a particular form of therapy, then, you know, it's in principle okay to keep going with it. Just don't give it a superstitious interpretation.
Thank you very, very much. I'm going to keep moving just because we have lots of folks waiting, Juan. But thank you. We'll try. We'll go back to Mark and see if we can get him. Mark in Coldwater, Michigan, can you hear us and can we hear you?
I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Yep.
Yes. What's your question?
Great. Thank you. I'm a recent convert to the church. My wife and I were raised Protestant and last year made the change. And
welcome home.
Well, thank you, but you may be sad to hear I've been really struggling with doubt these past few months, and I'm really just looking for some direction or advice. It's all kind of breaking down for me.
Okay. Because we only have a few moments before the end of the hour, what are you having doubts about, or what's the source of the doubts?
The source of the doubt is from atheist materials like Harris and the Four Horsemen Guide.
Okay.
And smart friend that I have. So it's really questions about whether Christianity as a whole is true.
Mm-hmm.
If it is, I'm convinced that Catholicism is the way to go.
Mm-hmm.
But just looking for direction as to materials I could read or your advice.
Okay. I would have a piece of advice and also some materials to recommend. The first thing is it's understandable when people have experienced a major life transition that they can experience some doubts about, have I done the right thing? Did I go too far? Did I not go far enough? It's an unsettling thing, and so it can cause people to become unsettled and to have some doubts. That's not unusual. When you're in that period, it can be advisable to say, you know, I've made this choice. I'm going to give it a chance. I'm not going to expose myself to a lot of stuff that I would find upsetting at this time. I'm not really – I mean, I've just gone through this big shift. Is that really the time to take on another potential big shift? It can be entirely reasonable to say, you know, my wife and I made this shift and I'm just going to give it some time and put aside these materials that have been upsetting me and not talk to my friends about these subjects that have been upsetting. And I'm just going to give this a shot for now and see how it goes. In addition, I would recommend some resources. If you go to Catholic.com, type in the store, shop.catholic.com, type in atheism, you'll get quite a number of different resources there. We also have free resources on it at Catholic.com. I'd particularly recommend some books that we've published by our staff apologist, Trent Horn. I'd also recommend my book, A Daily Defense. So I hope that helps you out, as I'm sure you can hear the music. We're out of time, but thank you so much for calling and calling again.
Thanks, Mark. Sorry we had a little trouble with the sound there, but you are always welcome to call. Again, the number 888-318-7884. Open Forum continues next hour with Jim Blackburn taking over the duties from Jimmy Akin. Jimmy, thanks so much for another great hour.
My pleasure.
And I hope we'll get to say hi to more folks in Australia and Oceania next hour. If you're there, if you're out there in the Pacific Ocean listening, give us a nod on Facebook.
And hi to all of our friends in Guam who I know are there.
Come on, say hello. We'll see you in a minute.